Hey there, my name is Emma Rose Cohen, and I am CEO and co-founder of Final Straw, and this is my startup story.
Every wildfire began with a spark. Every superhero has an origin story, and every single startup has a moment that they point to as their beginning, and every founder has a purpose that drove them in the midst of all obstacles. That is the startup story. The startup story would not be possible if it wasn't for the support of our sponsor, MoboCash. Move money like a miracle with MoboCash, the free money app that kicks cash. Download MoboCash app on iTunes or Google Play today, and you'll get your slick new Mobo card in the mail. You are no longer dependent upon digital currency alone, but you'll have a card that allows you to purchase at POS stations, restaurants, buy online, anywhere that you want to use your money. No credit check, no credit impact, quick direct deposit, FDIC insured, and free to register and activate. Support our sponsor, MovoCash. Visit movo.cash or thestartupstory.co/movocash. Before we jump into our episode this week, I want to share a review that was posted on iTunes by a past guest, Ilana Zivkovic, who gave the Startup Story a 5-star rating and wrote, "James is a truly masterful interviewer with a compelling vision of inspiring and supporting entrepreneurs out there at all stages of the journey through his attentive work with existing founders. As a result, the Startup Story fills a valuable space in the podcast realm of the personal side of entrepreneurship. As a featured entrepreneur, I cannot speak highly enough about my experience working with James. This podcast is a must-listen for anyone contemplating building something from scratch, as well as those farther in the journey seeking their next source of inspiration." Well, thank you so much, Ilana, for an incredible review. And for those listening, Ilana shared her story with us just a few weeks ago as she was talking about her startup, Work. In fact, in that episode, she offered 20% off all services if you mention the startup story when you speak to them. So make sure you check that episode out with Ilana and check out her startup at workpeople.com. And again, that's W-E-R-Q people.com. And just a reminder, if you found any value in any of the Startup Story episodes, please leave a review and plug your brand in it. I will continue reading a review every week, and giving your brand or startup a plug is the least I can do for taking the time out of your day to write a review. So please do so. Now, let's jump into this week's episode. Our guest today is Emma Rose Cohen, CEO and co-founder of Final Straw. Final Straw is a collapsible and reusable straw for a sucking alternative that will help reduce plastic waste across the globe. I'm going to be honest, I don't know too many startups that I get to introduce as a sucking alternative, but that is a part of the entertaining side of Emma's startup story. The inspirational and educational side of her story includes a Kickstarter experience that many hope for when they launch their Kickstarter campaign. In fact, Final Straw raised $1.89 million during their campaign.
We could not be the more quintessential Kickstarter story. It's like two kids with an idea and some spray paint that like are able to just blow an idea up. And then from there, it's like, oh shit, we have to make 200,000 straws, like without any idea how to do it. I mean, this is just the most classic story. And it's also just the proof that like, anyone can do it, because if you just have that unfailing determination, but also listening to social perceptions and cues, that will guide you as long as you can just keep getting back up.
In this episode, you will hear a very high-level pre-launch strategy that helped Final Straw to raise so much money during their campaign. You will learn how Emma keeps her focus amidst all the noise and the naysayers, and you will discover just how challenging growth can be for a startup after having such a successful Kickstarter campaign. Looking back on Emma's childhood, it's easy to see how environmental initiatives were going to be a very common thread throughout her life. You can also see how creativity plays a role in everything she does. Yet her story truly did not merge the two until her later years, when she found herself on a remote beach in Thailand, where she would spend the quiet morning hours walking the beach picking up discarded straws. But now, let's not jump ahead. Like all great stories, we need to start at the beginning, and Emma's early days were incredibly lively.
My first job was I would go around and collect all of the fallen fruit off my neighbor's trees and then go sell it at farmer's market. So looking back, I'm like, oh, wow, I guess waste minimization was always part of the ultimate plan. But back then I was just looking to make a quick dime, and I would hire my friends and my sister, and we'd go to the market and sell, you know, this kind of bruised fruit, but people just thought we were cute, and so they'd buy it from us.
That's awesome. How old were you at that time?
I was 7 when that business started. Additionally, I had another business where we would dress up and perform at garage sales. And so you wouldn't have to hire us or anything, but we'd go and then we'd do like the little hat with the tips. So yeah, it's so funny to look back on that now and just be like, okay, it all makes a little bit of sense.
Now, where do you think you got that from? Were your parents? What was their jobs?
I think that as the older child, you have this like fierce sense of independence. Growing up, I was so into my independence and being self-sufficient and being able to take care of myself. Isn't everything from our parents in childhood?
It all plays in, right? We try to reject it for some period of time.
Yeah, we're just tiny little robots that get programmed by our environment when we're little. So everything really can go back to that.
So here you are hustling fruit, your live performances at all local garage sales. So let's jump to your high school years. What did you think your future held? And what was your junior, senior year? There's career days. There's all these things people are talking about, taking the test and getting to college. What was in your mind at that point in time?
Oh, man, I'll be super honest. Not a lot. I found weed at a young age and I was really into it growing up. Luckily, I was able to balance school with that and still get really good grades, but I was your classic teenage dirtbag, really, just going to school, and thank God for my dad's genetics that I got with, you know, I'm pretty good at school, but you know, I was just partying and smoking and knew I wanted to go to college only because I wanted to get out of the house, but not really because I had a certain career in mind. It's a product of who you hang out with in high school. And I think growing up, I hung out with really great people. And then when I went to high school, I started hanging out with people that didn't really think about their futures. And so I kind of stopped for those years.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely the circle that you run with has an influence on you, especially now in your adult entrepreneur days. I'm sure you can see that as well. Your immediate five. Yeah.
The second I start hanging out with someone that is feeling my same frequency, it's like our ideas just explode. And we're like, you know, we're up till 4 a.m. talking. And then it like, we look at our phone, we're like, oh my gosh, I have an 8 a.m. meeting. Like, what are we doing? And and we can't stop. You know, I think that is definitely one of the most important things when you feel stuck in some way. Like, it might not be you. There's a great quote, pardon my French on this one, but I have to quote it directly. Before you diagnose yourself with depression, make sure you're not surrounded by assholes.
That is so good. That is a great quote. That's going to definitely be one of our Instagram images for your episode. So when did you start making that shift through in your college journey? When did you start making that shift to understanding what it is you wanted to do long term? What your purpose was? When did you start coming into focus?
There was kind of two pretty formative events, I would say. First was that some girlfriends and I were helping out with a single-use plastic bag ban in Santa Barbara, and we just like wanted to do it on our own terms. And we happened to have a bunch of mermaid outfits laying around, so we'd dress up like mermaids and we'd go to city council meetings and we'd do beach cleanups. And this turned into an after-school program, and we called ourselves Save the Mermaids, and eventually turned it into a 501c3 nonprofit. And that's really when I found that my passion is in sustainability and in raising awareness around waste management. Up until that, I studied neuroscience in my undergrad at University of Santa Barbara, and I loved it and I thought it was so fascinating. But after spending a semester working and doing my EMT, I realized that I hate hospitals and that it would be the opposite of really what I want my work environment to be. So I took a quick pivot on that one. It all really came together on a trip that I went on in Southeast Asia. I was in Cambodia, and it's still so ravaged by the Khmer Rouge in that time, and it was very intense for me. I read this quote by Noam Chomsky, and it said some of the most powerful words I've ever heard, and it was, "With increased privilege comes increased responsibility." And those words just hit me so hard, feeling so privileged to grow up in a family where my parents are together and they love me and they're supportive and I got to go to college and all of these incredible things. And I was just looking at, what is my impact been on the world so far? What if I died today? What would people say about me? And it was somewhat depressing because I didn't like what my legacy would be at that point. So I kind of just was like, quarter life crisis, I have to move home. I have to break up with my boyfriend. I have to leave everything I know. I've got to, like, you know, apply to grad school and get a job in this field. And it was just like, boom, I got to make these changes in order to really find my path and figure it out what my contribution is for the world.
That's incredible. And I thank you for sharing that. What did you see of your legacy at that moment in time that was so significant that you knew you had to 180? What was it that you were seeing in yourself?
It was just so mediocre. I was making jewelry. That was my big gig. I had started a company doing hair feathers for celebrities, like really random shit that was like, wasn't really contributing to the greater good. And I think by reading that Noam Chomsky quote, I realized that it is my duty, because of what I was born into, to make the world better for others who aren't as fortunate. That really was what made everything change and has really put me down this path. I mean, talk about 180s. Like, I was just your classic, like, pot smoking kid, like putting in hair feathers and like making enough money to get by. And then it was something about this trip just really switched the way I thought about the world, about my daily activities, about how I spend my time, and about the impact that I want to leave.
That is awesome. How long ago was that trip?
So that was in 2013. Also on that trip was really when my obsession with straws started. I was on a remote beach in Thailand. I was in Tonsai, which at the time was a lot smaller than it is now, but this tiny little village where everyone there was a dirtbag climber and, you know, just hanging out. And I would walk along the beach every morning and collect straws. And there was just like two fistfuls every morning. And I've got this photo of me in Thailand holding them over my face. And it was just like, that was the moment where I was like, what are we doing? Straws are so stupid. And for the majority of people, completely unnecessary. And yet they leave this lasting impact on the earth. So that was where that obsession started.
Yeah. So 2013 was a big year. I mean, you had that realization and your obsession with straws started happening. So you come home. What were those next steps for you? And then also too, what were your next steps for you? And then how do you maintain that perspective and that passion 6 years after the fact, right? Like, it's easy for us to kind of get that. I mean, again, I'm not diminishing the experience, but that camp high and come back and be fine or be back to our norm 60 days later.
I go through the highs and lows every day. I mean, if you're close to me, you know you're getting like a 1 a.m. text with some crazy idea I have. And then the next morning I look back at it and I'm like, what was that? So I came back. I was living in Santa Barbara at the time and just basically left everything. I moved home, broke up with the person I was dating at the time, and left all of my very close friends to move back in with my parents at 29 years of age, which is not a proud moment, and just work and save money and really dive into whatever it was that was the passion, because I pivoted so many times. And at that moment, I thought it was environmental law. I thought I needed to write laws to change policy. What I realized through kind of going into that and doing one semester with the JD MBA was that you don't need to fight the laws. You can work from the inside. And so that is how I ended up applying for a job at Los Alamos National Laboratory in their waste minimization department, and then also applying to do a master's at Harvard in environmental management and sustainability. But I would say the way I kind of go about my thoughts and my passions is a little bit like pinball. Like, you know, I kind of just keep bouncing back and forth, but it gets narrower. And there is kind of one trajectory. And the big one is fix plastic pollution in the planet. I mean, that is my big thing. So what can I start doing on these smaller things that then are growing and expanding into that larger goal?
So knowing that you have that focus of eliminating or reducing plastics in the ocean, Final Straw is, I assume, step one in that mission. So you have your stints in law school, knowing that's not necessary to change the world that you want to change. You have this internship at Los Alamos. How do you get to the idea of Final Straw? What is that journey to the idea of Final Straw?
In my final year in my master's program, we had to do a thesis, and everyone was kind of coming up with these random things. And I started thinking about, what is one thing that just like really annoys me on a daily basis? And the thing I thought of is every time I go out to eat, like I can't eat a bunch at once. So I always have to take something to go. And I hate the to-go containers because you never know what you're going to get. You're going to get styrofoam, you're going to get plastic, you're going to get aluminum, all of these different things. And then, you know, I go home and then I put it on a plate and then I eat it and then I throw that thing away. So my idea was to, first of all, look at a life cycle assessment of a reusable container. So like, how many times does this reusable container need to be reused in order to hit the break-even point with a single-use container? And then secondly, could I design something that would be convenient to carry, easy to use, and, you know, simple to clean? And so I designed this collapsible to-go container, and that was what my thesis project was on. So I've wrapped that up. And a couple months later, I'm pretty miserable at Los Alamos. Like, I'm not a federal worker. That's just not me. you know, I'm way too weird, and I want to be able to use my creative expression in whatever I do. So I am there, I'm miserable, I'm ready to quit and just like go be a ski bum or something. I didn't really know what I was doing. And I get a call from my co-founder, and he was like, "Hey, I've got this concept for a reusable straw that fits in a case." And I was like, "Huh, this is interesting." Like, I was just working on this collapsible idea. Like, straws are about to get banned in Seattle. Like, oh, what cool timing. But, you know, do people really use straws? Is that like a big thing? And because I quit using straws like 5 years ago. And so we were like, well, you know, probably. I think some people out there use straws. Like, it seems like they're common. So we just kind of started going down the path and working on the product and creating a prototype. And then, you know, I was working on all of the marketing and creating a social media presence. And it was really so fun. Like, if you look back on the old Final Straw Instagram, like all those memes, that was me. And on a Saturday night, just like giggling incessantly to myself while making really silly content. And that's where I find my passion, is delivering messages in a way where people are open to hearing it. Because when you have a smile on your face, when you're laughing, when there's something creative and interesting, you're so much more open to other ideas. So October 2017 was the first conversation around this straw concept, which went through many different naming iterations. At one point, we thought it would be a good idea to call it Suck It, which is a terrible idea. And the big problem is that I have a sense of humor like a 14-year-old boy. So luckily, I test most of the things I do, and I will go around and ask people, is this a good idea? And all of my girlfriends were like, have you heard of Me Too? And I was like, oh yeah, right. Okay, that's a terrible name for a company. You have to put your mouth on an object. Okay, strike that. Never mind. Anyways, so we ended up busting our butts and working really hard and studying all of the popular Kickstarters and you know, mirroring what we loved and rejecting what we didn't, and launched in April of 2018 to a world that loved talking about straws. I mean, you can read as many business books as you want out there, but ultimately what will determine the success or failure of your company is timing. It's that simple. And that's the hardest thing, is that we might have these great ideas that can change the world, but if people aren't ready, then it's nothing.
Yeah. And I want to talk about timing because based on that 2018 date, there were a lot of things happening in the world around straws. But before we get there, in that time span you took us through from your thesis to your prototype of your collapsible to-go container, you inserted your co-founder into that story. And how did he come into play? How did you guys meet? Was he part of your MBA program? Like, how did you guys connect prior to Final Straw?
My co-founder, Miles, was dating a girlfriend of mine, one of my best friends. She's 28, he's 23. And when she first started telling me, I think he was 21 at the time, or when they first started, she was telling me about him. I'm like, you're dating a what? Like, cool, I guess. And anyways, I met him at Burning Man for about an hour. We hung out and he seemed like a really great guy. And he had a really nice energy. And I was intrigued to talk to him. So that is how we met. And I was dressed up in a nun outfit. And that will always be his first impression of me. He initially just called me up to chat. I don't think he really had an agenda. And I never had an agenda. You know, I thought it was a cool idea. I thought it was fun. Mind you, I was really bored at my job. So I was kind of like, I'll help out with anything. So it really started off as me just kind of doing like some consulting stuff and throwing around ideas. But with my obsessive personality, that doesn't last very long. And so all of a sudden it's me working nonstop, quitting my job and really creating a brand and a voice through this company.
Awesome. So now that brings us to your Kickstarter campaign, Final Straw. You didn't go with Suck It. Totally understand that. So April of 2018 is your Kickstarter. And statistically, I mean, there's lots of ways to game a Kickstarter, right? So, but statistically, most Kickstarters don't succeed. What was your Kickstarter experience? And what did you do before the launch? And then how did the launch of the Kickstarter campaign go?
Sure. So the key to a successful Kickstarter is pre-launch strategy. If you're not launching to an audience that is excited about your idea, hungry to find out more, and has a level of trust that you're gonna deliver a product, then there is no point in launching. I get, you know, I actually have a canned response Kickstarter advice reply because I get emails all the time. Hey, I'm throwing this Kickstarter, what advice do you have? And so I always send them these two articles by Tim Ferriss, or someone actually wrote on his blog. One of them is how to collect 100,000 emails, and the other one is how to raise $100,000. Two very, very detailed descriptions of pre-campaign strategies. I could explain them now, but I would just recommend going up and looking at these articles and doing exactly what they said, because that is what we did. You need an audience to launch to. If you launch on Kickstarter and think that the organic traffic on their platform is enough, you're very wrong. Or maybe you're going to get lucky. But I think the pre-campaign strategy mixed with the social following that I had created through just making silly memes and doing the social hustle, I was able to get us a following of about 10,000 people before we launched. And then additionally, you know, I was following every single news story around plastic straws. And so I knew every single reporter that had written an article about plastic straws, which was a lot.
Yeah, it was huge then.
700 articles up until when we launched about plastic straws. And now there's, I mean, thousands and thousands.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was constantly trying to basically spamming all those reporters with what we were doing. And so it was kind of that mix and trying to be creative and being scrappy and finding anyone that would talk to me or listen to me and hear about what we were working on and then send them a prototype and just hope that they'll tell their friends.
How long did your campaign run for?
30 days.
How much did you raise?
$1.89 million.
That is rad.
It's nuts. It's unbelievable. The day before launch, I'm just praying that we're going to sell enough straws that I won't have to make them myself, you know, in the garage.
That is amazing. So we're talking, well, actually, by the time your episode airs, it'll be a year from when your Kickstarter launched, because it'll be launching in April. What an amazing story of that Kickstarter success, but let's talk about the after side of Kickstarter, right? Because now you have to go into manufacturing and fulfillment, and you can hear there are so many stories of where companies just fall apart because they either underestimated the manufacturing cost or the volume of success was going to come from Kickstarter. But there, what was your post Kickstarter plan like? So really, what was the last year like for you?
We could not be the more quintessential Kickstarter story. It's like two kids with an idea and some spray paint that like are able to just blow an idea up. And then from there, it's like, oh shit, we have to make 200,000 straws, like without any idea how to do it. I mean, yeah. This is just, it's the most classic story. And it's also just the proof that like literally anyone can do it, because if you just have that unfailing determination, but also listening to, you know, social perceptions and cues, that will guide you as long as you can just keep getting back up.
No, I don't want to roll over that real quick. You said keep getting back up. Is the implication that you're going to keep, some things are going to suck and you're going to keep not getting knocked down? Let's talk about those.
I don't even know how many times I've broken down in tears. I felt so alone that I don't have anyone to go to, that no one understands what I'm working on, that it's all for nothing. This is worthless, and that removing straws from the waste stream isn't going to change anything. I mean, I can get down on myself in like a million different ways, whether it's like social, personal, environmental. Like, I think the self-talk is really where you start to go down. And that's where I've really had to just do a ton of work on self-care and ensuring that I'm getting adequate exercise, adequate nutrition, and definitely not adequate sleep, but I at least like will try sometimes.
How significant is your, because I want to stay on this section for just a moment, because I think it's so critical, because I think it's a part of entrepreneurship that does not get talked about enough. And that is those valleys, right? We talk about the peaks and you see those fake Instagram, you know, it's like, oh, I'm an entrepreneur. I made, you know, $400,000 first 30 days and I'm sitting in, you know, I'm working valet, but I'm sitting in this Lambo right now for the photo, you know. But I want to talk about the real side of it, and that is in those valleys. How critical has your community or network been, or other entrepreneurs, you know, been to your sanity in this journey?
It's everything. It's the only thing holding me together. They are like the glue and I am all the like pieces that are not quite put together. And, you know, having the support network, having an incredibly strong partner is so important, and not necessarily business partner. I'm talking just any sort of partner in your life. It could be a best friend, it could be a romantic partner, or it yeah. could involve business, but it's what I can go back to. It's my safety. And with a brand new company that's not even a year old, there's so many unknowns. And it feels like, if you've ever been camping, I did this like survival thing and I learned how to make a bow drill fire. And it's like, it's so hard and you've worked up this whole sweat and you're just like, you're exhausted physically. And then you get this tiny little spark. And then from there, you have to like bundle it in this little like thing of fibers to make a tiny little flame. And then you've just like worked your ass off for this tiny, tiny, tiny little flame that you hold in your hand. And then you have to go put that into the fire and hope that you can spark something bigger. But then there's wind and there's rain and there's all of these natural elements that are trying to blow your fire out. And that's just how it feels right now. Like, I've just got this little flame. All I can do is just like hurl my body over it to try and yes. save it. And that's the closest way I can describe it.
Is a spectacularly accurate description of what this is like. Man, that was incredibly visual, and that was so authentic. In this year, right, you come off of a massive high of 1.89 Kickstarter. I mean, just hugely successful in the realm of Kickstarters. And one would think, maybe I have listeners thinking, well, my gosh, if I had a Kickstarter that was successful in 1.89, my startup would be, it'd be a lot easier to execute, and I wouldn't be nearly discouraged. Like, let's give some real truth to that narrative when they think, because a lot of people think money just answers it, and that when it comes to executing, and that's just not the truth. So what was your experience like as soon as it ended and the high was over? What was real life like?
Mo money, mo problems.
Absolutely. But in your space,
that is really sums it up. I mean, when you have an expectation or actually a hope and a prayer and a dream of selling like 70,000, I couldn't even think bigger than that. I've recently learned to set my goals much higher than I necessarily think are accomplishable, because I tend to hold myself back with like, I want to accomplish my goals. And so I set them lower in order to know that I can hit them. So like the Kickstarter closes and it's like, we didn't even celebrate. I mean, there was nothing. It was work for 16 to 20 hours a day, 7 days a week. I mean, it still is. Like, it's nonstop. I'm in Telluride right now at a venture accelerator, and it's like, you know, we're working on content all day. And I think the guys working in the bar underneath the workspace think I just moved in. Like, I just live there. But it's so much more complicated trying to deliver product to 100,000 people with, I mean, the logistics alone is so complex. And when you have zero infrastructure set up. I mean, we launched this Kickstarter. We didn't have a manufacturer. We didn't have a 3PL. And we didn't have any sort of financial experience. I mean, so to divert a little bit, like 2 weeks into doing the Kickstarter, we get an interesting call from a very famous TV show where you go and pitch your ideas. Well, you can't say no to that. So 2 weeks after the Kickstarter closed, we go on Shark Tank and present our prototype. But 2 weeks into the Kickstarter, when they first called us, they're like, okay, send us your balance sheets, your P&Ls, blah, blah, blah. And we're like Googling in the background, what's a balance sheet? You know, I mean, it's like, it's that bad. And I honestly, I've been telling this story publicly because I think that people can get discouraged by what it looks like you have to come up against. And I think the biggest thing in business is you learn on the fly. You're going to make so many mistakes. I mean, geez Louise, it's just never ending the amount of mess ups I make in a day. But if you're a good entrepreneur, you're going to learn from those, and you're going to hold those failures and those lessons very near and dear to your heart. And you're going to take those and you're going to create successes out of those. You're also going to create more failures, but yes, it's that trajectory. It's continuing to ping pong back and forth along this line where you know this like greater goal. You don't know how you're going to get there. You don't know who's going to go with you, but you know you're going and nothing is going to stop you.
Oh man, that was so incredibly powerful. And I could not agree more with the value of failure. But my curiosity wants to ask, when you look at your journey, what do you see as the most valuable failure you've gone through? And that because it's contributed to so much more in your life.
Oh, I mean, 100% trusting my gut. I've found that my intuition is so powerful. And when I can tap in and really listen to what I know, those certain truths around the company, around the business, that I really am able to push things so rapidly when I can just channel that energy without obstacles. I mean, to give this a concrete example, I had my first operations person who was working for me. I knew it wasn't right, but I wasn't really in charge of operations. Miles was watching that, and she was working more directly with him. But every time I would interact with her, it left me with a lot of questions and concerns and lack of communication, to the point where we had to have a talk about that. And I said, you know, hey, I'm not trying to micromanage. I just need to know what's going on. Ultimately, I didn't listen to my gut, and I was like, I'll just let Miles deal with that. Well, what that led to was that 10,000 packages did not get delivered before Christmas when we promised they were going to.
Yeah.
We essentially ruined 10,000 people's Christmases. And you can imagine what that customer service email looks like. So I spent my holidays this last year praying for mercy amongst these furious Kickstarter backers who, first of all, it's a Kickstarter. So like, we're really sorry we didn't deliver when we said we were going to, but also like, it's a Kickstarter. But then, you know, trying to remain empathetic to their concerns, because ultimately I had made a promise that I didn't keep. But then on my end, I'm like, I'm working so hard. I have like not even taken a nap. Like, I don't even know which way is up and down. And why are you yelling at me? And what is going on? And that's when I also learned to not get, I'm so emotionally tied to the product that if someone makes any kind of complaint, I want to like fight them. And so that's when I was like, okay, I cannot answer customer service emails any longer. That is someone else's job. And I take it way too personally. Like, I feel like it's someone telling me that like, I am a bad person when really like they're just upset the product didn't arrive when they said it was going to.
Yeah. Oh man, that is awesome. The value in failure is so powerful. And a lot of times that fear of failure will cause us to miss out on some incredible opportunities for growth. I love that you embrace it.
And I think a really good way to practice that on a daily basis, because I do, and I, you know, everyone's like, you're so extroverted. You're so good at like talking to people. And I'm like, that is a skill that I've taught myself to have. So like, I'll go out and like, I'll just kind of have this like idea to say something to a stranger, but then you like talk yourself out of it. And you're like, no, like, I don't want to like bother them or anything. And as I continue to push myself past that voice that says like, keep it in, I let myself out. And then I end up making these incredible connections and meeting wonderful people and having conversations that are riveting and all of these things. So I think every habit we have is a muscle, and you can train that muscle to be as strong as you want. Obviously, a healthy amount of fear is what keeps humans alive, and there is the fight or flight response for a reason. But that being said, learning when to try and let go of those boundaries, of those ties that we put on ourselves, and just channel your inner self.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that is awesome. Let me ask a question that I ask a lot of, because I have a feeling that you kind of live in this space. But one of the questions I ask every single founder on the Startup Story, it's about gratitude, because we can't do this alone. We will drive ourselves insane. We'll reach a breaking point faster than is necessary. And I also think too, that when we lose sight of those people that have contributed to our life and to our careers and to our startups, when we lose sight of that, we're inevitably going to end up at a point of failure, because we're going to think we did this on our own. Now we think that we stood tall on our own. So when you look back at your life and your entrepreneurial journey, who do you look back to with just immense gratitude for their contribution to where you are today, where Final Straw is today? Like, who are all those people that you look to with an immense amount of gratitude?
I mean, geez, there's so many. I can look back to like my second grade teacher who said to my mom, she had a really thick Texas accent. She said, Emma and I are trying to figure out who's boss and I'm going to win. I definitely, first and foremost, would have to say my parents. My dad is an entrepreneur and he's an architect and he has his own company and is such a hard worker. And I would always see him work so hard and I would never understand why. Why would you want to work that hard with your life? Like, it doesn't seem very fun. And now, like, he can barely get me on the phone. He's like, can we talk? Like, you're always working. And I'm just like, oh my goodness. I get it now. Like, I get what that's like when you just want to be doing your thing and ensuring that every energy that you're putting forward is to advancing that. And then to your point around gratitude on the team and not doing this alone, my function at Final Straw has changed so much. You know, when it started off, it felt like I was doing everything. And now I really step back and I let my team do what they're best at. And it really does feel like the conductor, where you are kind of watching a symphony and you're like, what is he really doing? Like, he's just kind of waving a stick. And then, but everyone's like working together in this like beautiful harmony. So you're like, okay, like, he's probably just doing magic, but it's working. Everyone is blossoming in their own roles. And that is really, I think, a lot about what my role is transforming into, is to inspiring those around me to be creative, feel autonomous, and do the best work that they can do to further this company and greater mission.
What do you think of that greater mission to eliminate, reduce plastics in the oceans? What is that next step for you, right? Because Final Straw really is a chapter in that large book that you have. What is that next step to accomplish that goal for you?
So, yeah, I mean, I've definitely got the 3, 5, 10, and 20-year goals, but I would say keeping it in the 3-year goal. So Final Straw is the first product of Final. We are working on all kinds of different final products or foreverables that will replace single-use plastic. So we're currently prototyping a fork, which I'm so excited about because, as I said, like, I'm not a straw user. I'm not my customer, but I am a fork user, and I bet you are too.
I am.
So I'm really thrilled to keep in touch with my creative side, keep working on the brand voice. Like, I love writing the scripts and doing the commercials and doing all of that creative, silly stuff. That's really what lights me up. Answering the emails is the shitty part about it, but we just have to do it. And together that makes for the peaks and the valleys and the whole experience.
What is that metric internally when you will know, okay, I have accomplished that mission that I wanted to?
This is building on that bigger mission. And I think that bigger mission, yes, is reducing single-use plastic, but it's also about increasing awareness around waste. I don't like to just focus on plastic because in a lot of instances, paper is just as bad. Plastic has, the impact is really in the end of life in that it doesn't go away. Well, paper, on the other hand, requires a ton of energy, a ton of water, a ton of fuel for transport. And that is forgotten when we just look at a paper straw versus a plastic and say, oh, which is better? My mission is really around awareness and education as well. But ultimately, it's about fixing the problem at the source, which is that we use things at an alarming rate for 2 seconds that are meant to last forever. Plastic isn't the problem. It's the way we use it. So changing those systems, in addition to creating waste management facilities in countries that don't have it, I guess you could say when I build my first waste minimization plant in India, I will have felt like I made it.
That's awesome. And the reason I asked that question, because it's one of those things that we can have a goal, but if we don't have a symbol of what that goal is, we don't know exactly what that metric or that target is, we may have passed it at some point. And on the other side of that is just frustration. It's like, I never accomplished it. Well, no, actually you did. You just never put a name to it. And I knew you were so driven that there had to have been something. So.
Yeah. I mean, it really is about solving problems for me. And, you know, I do try and have smaller, littler wins in the way. I think one thing I've also really learned on this journey is how important it is to take a minute to celebrate the wins. Because, you know, when we closed our Kickstarter, there was no champagne, there was nothing. It was literally like cool, closed, sweet, working till 3 a.m. next day, boom, just like it never stopped. And so I actually created a wins channel on Slack. So we all do shout outs and do little wins and the tiny little things that keep me going on the day to day as I'm on this path to trying to put in this massive waste management facility in India really helps keep it fresh, keep it exciting, and keep the juju flowing.
You know, you've mentioned a few things that lead me to believe that there is a mentor in your life, right? There's a lot of things that you've spoken to that have just been incredibly powerful, right? Celebrate the wins and the self-narrative and self-care. What other entrepreneur, I'm assuming they're an entrepreneur, but what mentor has really poured into you to help shape a lot of the way you approach your business?
There's so many, and it's a lot of books and it's a lot of reading. And I'm lucky enough now to be in this network where I'm meeting more entrepreneurs, because before Final, I could probably tell you two or three friends that I had that had started their businesses. And now it's like my eyes have been opened to this network of people who are dissatisfied with the status quo and want to change it and want to do it on their terms. I have to attribute Tim Ferriss to like a lot of my success, the 4-hour work week, and just thinking differently about success. And then also thinking about hacking productivity and these tools that people use that are tried and true to make your days flow, to increase mental activity, to slow down mental activity, all of these different things that for these people that are performing at such a high level, whether it is business or athlete or any of these things, and all of which that I really admire, I'm constantly trying to take those lessons and apply them to myself. So I'm reading Principles by Ray Dalio right now. It's great. I read The Boron Letters before that. That was great. There's so many resources out there. And I think, you know, if you go with a 4.5-star Amazon review, you're pretty good. Like, you're going to learn something. Like, maybe it's too long and maybe a lot of it's a waste of time. But I always find in these books something that does resonate with me on a very deep level. And then once I hit that frequency, it really starts to expand and grow and change the way I'm thinking about business because I am so new to it. Like, this is my first real company, like WTF. Like, overnight, I went from like never running a company to having a multi-million-dollar company. Like, that's insane. The level of chance for failure was incredibly high. Yeah. And so I knew that, and I knew that I needed to dive in. So I bought Accounting for Dummies. I like go on YouTube. I have like my PhD from University of YouTube. Like, that is just where I've learned so much. So it's hard to speak to one. You know, obviously I said my dad, who's the smartest person I know. And in his words, he has already forgotten more than I'll ever know. That's awesome. His favorite quote he likes to tell me, but it's true.
That's awesome.
The man is incredibly genius, but yeah, I think I pick up mentors along the way and you never know. I mean, geez, talking to some random person in a bar, like you'll pick something up. I think that going into conversations with the curiosity that the person you're talking to is an expert in something that you're not an expert in, it really changes the type of questions you ask and the information that you'll get out of what could be a trivial or surface conversation.
That's awesome. So I'm going to ask you for a moment to be a mentor to our listeners, right? And, you know, our listeners are entrepreneurs at various stages. Maybe they're aspiring to be, maybe they're a frustrated entrepreneur, maybe they're a defeated entrepreneur, but you're having coffee, not using a straw, obviously, and you just want to pour something into them in that moment. What encouragement do you have for the entrepreneur listener right now?
Well, I guess the first thing I would ask them is, what's your idea? And if it was shit, I'd tell them to abandon it because it's horrible. I guess my advice would be to try and step back from the idea, and you might be too close to it to see whether it has value or merit and how much value it does have. Because if you had asked me a year ago if we were going to sell $70,000 worth of straws, I would have said, I don't know. Maybe, I hope so, but you know, it's not that I knew that this was going to be an incredible success, but I also tested it in a very low stakes manner. So, you know, it wasn't do or die for me. Like, it wasn't, you know, get a second mortgage on the house. We put the idea out there in a controlled way and tested it. And we also tested it with people who weren't our friends, because your friends are going to give you the worst advice. And they're going to say, that's a great idea. You know, that vitamin water for dogs, like people are going to lose their minds. And it's like, no, that's a terrible idea. And so I think it is about getting objective advice and testing. You know, everyone was like, you guys need to go do a market test and look at your customer. And it's like, no, like, we just need to offer this to the public and see what happens. So I think there are ways to test things without necessarily diving in. Now, that being said, you also need to figure out when to go all in. And I know that that is a very difficult topic for a lot of people who can't necessarily afford to move forward without making sacrifices. So like, I wanted to quit my job. I'd saved up some money. So it wasn't that hard. Ultimately, if you are lucky enough to be someone that feels like you have this higher purpose and something that your life is dedicated to, and then you just kind of have to believe in that and let that guide you, but also listen as things are happening for if you need to pivot or change or slightly alter things. Cause like, I'm at this venture accelerator right now, and there's this woman who's got this very cool material, and she's making a product out of it that has such a low population of people who are going to be interested in that product. And it's like, girl, you got to pivot. Like, I know you're so married to this idea because you put so much time and effort and energy into it. You're way too close to it. You got to pull yourself out. You got to look at what you're doing and the fact that there is no money for a reason, because this is a product that's not a viable business. You know, those are hard things to do, but that's also why I don't answer customer service emails anymore, because I'm too emotionally tied to those aspects of my business.
So how many of you now are contemplating moving forward on a Kickstarter to bring your startup to life? I hope Emma's story and Kickstarter success inspires many, but let's not overlook one key takeaway in her story, and that was preparation. She spent significant time researching the writers and influencers in the straw movement. In fact, prior to launching her campaign, she had hundreds of authors at the ready to help promote the campaign. She knew what thought streams to insert her product into to get people talking about it. She truly knew what strategy sucked and didn't suck. Yes, that pun was in fact very intentional. She also prepared by sitting with mentors and learning from those who have accomplished more than her and were farther down the road than her. Yet, her mentors, while they were real people, were mentors that she never met. She spoke about the books that she learned from, the thought leaders she'd listened to, and she even spoke about the influence that Tim Ferriss has had in her life through all of his content. All of that input and influence she absorbed from such incredibly brilliant minds has contributed to her success. We will include the various books and resources that she spoke about in our show notes, so make sure you check that out. And in fact, I hope you view the startup story as your mentor. Sitting with Emma for this episode has inspired me greatly, and I'm incredibly grateful for Emma's willingness to share her startup story with all of us. I hope you will support Emma as she builds Final Straw and extends her product offering. Please visit finalstraw.com and pick up a few Final Straws for you, your employees, or even your friends and family. To use her words, it's a great non-waste solution that delivers an ergonomical sucking experience. I love Emma's sense of humor. And another way to support Emma is to follow Final Straw on Instagram @_FinalStraw_. Again, that's on Instagram _FinalStraw_. I say it every episode because I mean it. Entrepreneurs support other entrepreneurs. So let's support Emma and Final Straw. And now for my personal ask. The Startup Story community has been so incredible with sharing our podcast with others, but we have more stories to tell and more people to reach. We are a startup, and the most powerful way you can support the Startup Story podcast is to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram @thestartupstory.co. Share the Startup Story on your social media, either with a link or a screenshot. Make sure you tag or mention us @thestartupstory.co so we can see your help and say thank you for it. And lastly, share the podcast on your LinkedIn profile. The Startup Story is for entrepreneurs, so please do not underestimate the power of sharing the Startup Story on your LinkedIn profile so other entrepreneurs can discover us. In fact, most people struggle to share good content on LinkedIn anyways, so if you want to support the Startup Story, then search for the Startup Story company page, follow us, and share our posts to help encourage other founders and spread the word about the podcast. Every single founder has a story, and the startup stories we bring to you every week can encourage and inspire another founder. It might just be what they needed to hear to keep moving forward on their dreams. I look forward to sharing these stories every Tuesday with hopes to inspire you to start your story.